Welcome to the Wealth Building Made Simple podcast with Philip Washington Jr. Today's episode is brought to you by StonehillWealthManagement.com. Today, Philip talks about Bitcoin as conservative money, part two. Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. And now, here's Philip.
We are back with another episode of Wealth Building Made Simple, brought to you by Podcast Mansfield and StonehillWealthManagement.com. We'll leave the websites for those in the comments. I'm ready to get to this one right now. Let's do it. Today, we are following up on last week's episode about Bitcoin as conservative money. And I'm going through this because, as I mentioned in the last episode, just my whole thoughts of finance have been changing in general. The way that you used to invest, for real, and J.P. Morgan had a quote, gold is money, everything else is credit. And so what it was is, I know it sounds profound and like a super smart idea, but it's like everything else in society, we end up like messing things up so bad that we go back to first principles, things that they knew 100 years ago and that we lost over time. And you go, oh, this is why J.P. Morgan said that, right? Because the way that a system should work is the foundation of a system should be savings, like savings that appreciates in value and that is not manipulated and created more of. Because let's say that like I mentioned last time, you have savings and your savings is actually going up in value over time, over and above the cost of things. The only time that you would like take money out of your savings or use your savings to risk is if you thought it would bring a greater reward. And the only way that it would bring a greater reward is if it were a better value to society. And when it's a better value to society, it typically makes things more abundant. And so you had an incentive to use your money to make things better for everybody and abundant. And then you got paid for that, right? That's for your time and or your money. And that's the system that works properly. And so you wouldn't have all this malinvestment, this investing in stupid things that don't matter, because there's so much cheap money, right? So much monopoly money out here because the system is not built on a solid foundation of real savings. This system is built on credit, like literally credit, like just credit, money made up out of thin air, no grounding. And so the reason why you have this economic chaos, it's like the best analogy I can use is we got certain constants that make us be able to live life on Earth. We have gravity and we have like the speed of light and like just different things that like if it didn't work that way, if we didn't have gravity, we would like fall into space, right? And die, right? And so like if humans could go in and optimize, right, the reality to meet our needs in this temporary moment in time, I guarantee we would mess up everything. We would go, I can make speed of light a little bit better. I think I can change gravity so that we can like jump to Mars and back and forth. Like we would do foolish things, right? But in order for life to, or civilization to evolve, right, you have to have constants. You have to build on top of knowledge, on top of ideas, and continue to build so you can build civilization better and better and better and better and better. And so like the reason why things in finance are so complex and don't make sense is because it's so complex and doesn't make, like it's backwards. It's built on credit. Another example might be if you ever play Monopoly and you play at somebody's house where they like change the rules based on their whims, that's not a fun game, right? But that's literally the world we live in, where if you got money, jail is different for you. Right. If you got money, borrowing rates are different for you. If you like, it just And there's no problem with, like, if you got money, borrowing rates being different than you because you're pledging assets. But I'm just talking about the whole system in general is screwy because of just foolishness at the top. And I don't want to go into that in this conversation, but I'm just saying, like, things are backward. The way that I said it was supposed to be, where you have base conservative savings and then you invest based on being productive society, is how you're supposed to do it. Now, am I saying this because we need to go fix the world? Nah, like, let Caesar do what Caesar's going to do. I'm just saying, once you understand how it could be, you can create your own finances to be that way. And so for me, like, we save in Bitcoin, anything we don't need in the short term. We save in Bitcoin, right? And I am invested in companies like, giving full disclosure, not, it's not investment advice, but the ARK ETF, right? Cathie Wood's Next Generation ETF, because it owns companies that I think will capture a value premium in the next decade as we bring civilization forward, right? I own some companies that have Bitcoin on their balance sheet for a whole host of reasons, but the main reason is they're able to, like, there's all these bondholders that can only buy bonds, and they understand the value of Bitcoin, and they understand that the bonds are not going to earn much money, and so they can buy convertible bonds in these Bitcoin companies that have Bitcoin on their balance sheet and get a better yield in the future by buying those bonds, and then the companies take that money that they borrowed from the bond funds and invest it in Bitcoin. So it's like a backdoor way for them to buy Bitcoin and get a higher yield, right? And so, like, I'm buying them because it's a leverage way to play Bitcoin. And so I'm doing those things, and I'm building my stack, but it's a very focused stack because I'm focused, right? I know that as this adoption gets bigger and bigger over the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, right, there's going to be a time where then I have a big stack. There's plenty of companies going to want to lend me money against my stack. And I could say, hey, I see this idea that nobody sees, or I see a distressed company that just needs cash, and it's super useful for me to lend them my cash or buy shares in their company with borrowed money from myself to help them up, and it becomes easy. But there's no pressure or urgency for me to have to move on anything, because if I just leave it in savings, I'm very confident that my Bitcoin savings are going to appreciate at a higher rate than most assets on the planet, right? So there's no pressure. You relieve the pressure of having to hop from thing to thing, which is the way finance is supposed to be. What I did for simplicity purposes to kind of illustrate a point of, like, savings is it really helps you understand the finance system if you think about it in context of, like, the biggest pools of money. So, like, governments and sovereign wealth funds. But think of it from a government standpoint, because people go through their own learning curve individually. Individuals can move faster than companies. Companies move faster than governments. But we're a pretty smart species, so everybody ends up increasing their knowledge over time and understanding what the early individuals understood, right? So every person in the world wants money that can't be manipulated outside of themselves, right? It's the equivalent of saying, I want free will, right? Everybody wants free will, right? So then you go, cool. Nobody wants a money controlled by somebody else, is another way of saying it. So you say, cool. Okay. So then there's just Bitcoin is that money, and then there's the learning curve. But let me show you a point. So you say, okay, governments, the biggest thing governments need to buy for society is energy, right? They got to buy energy. And so you got to save energy. Before the Bretton Woods, which I won't go into that, but before the U.S. became the reserve currency, you know, countries settled up their energy debts net of trade in gold, right? Because it was like a neutral currency, And so then it became the dollar, and then the U.S. did what they did, and people were like, I don't really trust you anymore because you took money and you're not honest and blah, 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 blah. So less people are saving in treasury bills, and so they're looking for a neutral currency. Well, it's only a matter of time before people begin to understand, they think they really already are, but the value of Bitcoin. Because what I did was I said, okay, let's take the price of oil, and let's look at if you were to save in different assets, how much oil you can buy, like over time. Meaning, like if I'm the treasurer, right, for a country, I'm going, well, man, we got to buy energy next year, in 10 years, in 20 years, in 30 years, and we're making all this money, like just like an individual making all this money. So where do I store the excess money so I can buy energy cheap for my society, right? Again, gold is an option. Treasury bills, not really so much for so many people, but for some. And then you go, all right, so I'm going to walk through those options, but I'm not going to use cash because that's obvious. So I looked up the price of Bitcoin in 2014. I was like, you could have bought Bitcoin in 2014 for like $767. And at that time, the price of per barrel of oil was about $93. So you could have bought Bitcoin at, you could have bought like 8 Bitcoin, right? In 2014, or I'm sorry, you could have bought 8 barrels of oil in 2014 if you know, for one share of Bitcoin, right? Fast forward to today, April, Bitcoin's around 62,000. The price of oil is about $84, right? For that same Bitcoin, you can buy like 731 barrels of oil. It's quite a bit of oil for the same Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is 91 times more than every dollar invested, right? Let's look at the S&P 500, right? You could have said, because this is what countries do. The reason why the S&P 500 is priced so expensively is a lot of countries and sovereign wealth funds save in the S&P 500. And so S&P 500 in 2014 was $1,931 per index share. In 2024, right, the price of the S&P 500 today is about $1,000. I'm sorry, about $5,000. Let me get my math. Sometimes, oh, here it is. I don't know why. So in 2014, you could have bought 20 barrels. In 2024, at the current prices, you can buy about 60 barrels. So three times more for every dollar invested. Let me repeat that. Bitcoin bought you 91 times more per dollar. S&P bought you 3 times more per dollar if you saved in it. So remember those numbers. Let's go to the next one. If I go to gold, right? Gold would have bought you, I'm gonna skip the conversions, right? 2014 to now. Gold, you could have bought 2 times more barrels of gold, you know, for every dollar invested, right? Because in 2014, the price of gold was about $1,266, which would have bought you 13 barrels. And then in 2024, with the price today, you can buy about 28 barrels of oil, so about 2 times more. Let's assume you save in real estate, right? Let's assume you save in real estate. St. Louis Fed 2014 U.S. median home price was $273,000. So that would have bought you $2,935, 35 barrels of oil. In 2024, the median home price is $417,000, which would have bought you about 4,900 barrels of oil. So that's about 1.69 times for every dollar you invested, right? So summary, Bitcoin bought you 91 times more oil per dollar you invested. The second highest was the S&P 500. Third was gold. Fourth was real estate over a little over 10 years of savings, right? This is so like in 10 years is about the time when people begin to wake up and go, oh, I need to like really readjust like what I'm thinking about. And so countries are looking at this and they're going, okay, you know, we need to allocate some portion of our money to this asset class. So, because one thing is to wake you up and then do your due diligence. And from my perspective, the reason why you saw, like, you know, I got a friend of mine, and he, like, we were talking about the Illuminati, and I was like, bro, like, the Illuminati is not really rich, because I think people, when they get to the top, they're going to realize nobody, there's no people at the top running everything. Like, there's nobody at the top. There's people close to the top that are all competing for their own industry, but there is no top. Like, top is open. Like, nobody controls the world, right? They're just all trying to figure it out. Like, the emperor has no clothes. But I'm saying, if there was somebody, and I don't believe in it, I said, like, the most powerful money manager is Larry Fink. You know what I mean? Like, he's the largest mutual fund company out there. Like, when you, on those Instagram pages he sends me, you know, it's all talking about that guy's the Illuminati. I'm like, come on, guys, just chill out. But if there was one, right? This guy's a powerful guy in finance. They got the largest Bitcoin ETF, right? And my point in saying that is, they did their due diligence. You know what I mean? Like, if anybody understands the design system, you know, really, really well, it's that guy. You know what I mean? And so, like, what their understanding is, like, this is where the market is. This is just the rational thing to do to give people what they want, because everybody, again, wants the same thing. They want a base currency that they can save in, that is not manipulable. I had another friend. He was he's really big into crypto, he's really into crypto. He eats, breathes, and sleeps it. And so he was talking about all these, you know, cryptos, and set aside the point that most cryptos are really just unregulated securities from my perspective, because, like, there's people who can control, change things. You know what I mean? Like, Ethereum, like, literally, like, just destroyed the miners' business by making changes to the protocol by, like, the CEO, and he's not called CEO, but the guy who runs it and his team, right? So I'm like, this sounds like a security to me, a software company that they're just changing the name. And that's fine, like, whatever. But the point is, it's manipulable, right? Versus Bitcoin. So where I'm going with it is, he was telling about all these things that these other software protocols on crypto can do and blah, 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 blah. And I go, that's great, man. Like, and there's lots of stocks and there's lots of companies that do well and are going to innovate and that are going to create efficiencies in the short term. But I'm saying, like, I have to inhabit the mind of a rich person, right? And rich people don't really care about that nerd stuff, right? They're not buying assets for those details. What they're doing is what I just described in the beginning. They're saying, like, I need to protect my money, right? Where can I put it where it can't be manipulated, right? I want to do my due diligence enough to get confident in that. And then once they're confident, once they do, they're going to pay very smart people to do their due diligence and go through the process. And they're going to say, forget all these. Like, I'm buying Bitcoin, right? Like, Bitcoin's better than gold. Bitcoin's better than, you know, real estate, because, right, I watched people in other countries who were billionaires, and they got on the wrong side of the government, and they took their stuff, and the area got destroyed by war or whatever, and so that property they own in downtown Ukraine is no longer worth anything, right? So, like, they're like I'm not saying they're not going to buy that stuff, but they're like, I'm going to put, like, a good amount of chunk of my wealth on this decentralized monetary system where nobody controls the ledgers. It can't be manipulated. It's only going to be 21 million. And so everything, as we become more productive as humans, everything depreciates relative to this fixed supply of money, right? I'm saying they're coming to that conclusion slowly. And as they move their money onto the store of value, it gets nuts. Because rich people, again, they don't care about all this technical stuff. They just want to know, is my money safe, right? And you get rewarded as an investor by having an information edge, right? Meaning, like, you understand what the market wants, you do your due diligence ahead of the market, you position yourself, and then you wait, right? And in the waiting, there's going to be volatility because people change their mind, right? People get new information. There's also, like, people who know who are trying to shake out the weak hands so they can buy more, right? But there's just a process, and the process takes a while, and you get rewarded for your patience, right? And there's marriages that way, raising kids is that way, having friendships that way. Like I don't, there's nothing in my life that I found valuable, specifically with my kids, where I will see something that's going to benefit them that they don't see, right? And like 99.9% of the time, I can tell them what I think they should do, and they're going to do what they want to do, and I got to just patiently have faith in them to like come to their own conclusion, which is my conclusion, because I want the best for them and they want the best for them. It just may take them a while, right? Same thing with money and investing in the economy. And so like, I really hope this helps. I think, you know, this is why like Stone Hill, with our portfolios, you know, and we have different weightings based on risk tolerance, but like the anchor portfolio, the anchor part of our portfolio is Bitcoin that we rebalance or reallocate to as markets move and do different things. But that's, you know, over time, the allocation will become I don't want to go into all that, but, you know, for my money, it's like the core, right? It's like the core thing that I use in allocating money, and I benchmark everything else off of that. And by the way, like there's some pretty dope stocks that you still can buy that I mentioned before that I think would do well in the short term and that are embracing Bitcoin and putting it on their balance sheet, which sort of supercharges them. So I'm saying that to say, like, don't dismiss real estate, don't dismiss stocks. I'm just helping you in your mind rethink how Bitcoin fits on the balance sheet. Until next week, enjoy yourself.
Philip Washington Jr. is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.